Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Stephanie Curtis. Today, we're listening back to one of our favorite roundtables. The topic was books we've lied about reading. Our guests' answers might surprise you. Here's Carrie.
I don't care who you are. You know you've done this. I have. I'm going to confess to that a little later in the roundtable. Listen to what Luke Burbank said about it.
I read the first 30 pages of Underworld, but if I'm at a party and I've been drinking, I would just tell you with a straight face that I've read Underworld.
Luke Burbank from a conversation I had from my new Thread podcast. More on that soon. In the meantime, as our guests talk about why we fib about reading certain books, I'd love to hear from you on Twitter about this. Have you ever heard yourself lying about having read a book? Was it a straight-up lie? Yeah, that book was great. Or was it more a lie of omission, letting people believe that you read it and hoping you weren't found out? Get to me on social media about this. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Our roundtablers today, Vincent Moniz Jr. is a writer and spoken word artist. He has a new book coming out that is as yet untitled. We await the title. we await the title. Hey, hi.
Hello.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
You've already proven yourself to be a great liar, so you're perfect for the roundtable.
Excellent. Off air, I am incredible.
Is that a lie or is that true?
It may or may not be. Who knows?
Gotcha. Molly Mogren Catt is with us. She's the founder and writer of the Hey Eleanor Project. Good to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Enrique Olivares. How'd I do? Olivares. There, okay, is Vice President of Communications and Development at Clues. It's a nonprofit organization for Latinos in our region. Welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. This is great.
You started all this.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
I wanted to put this conversation together when I saw you tweet a stack of Louise Erdrich books and a question about what you should read first,
right?
How many were on that stack?
There were around seven. And what happened is I listen to your show all the time, and I think you talk about Louise a lot. I mean, Carrie talks about Louise a lot.
I love Louise. So, I'm a total fangirl
Louise. So I don't know what it was. It was a context of one of your shows or something I had read, and I'm like, I should be reading Louise Erdrich. Now, for me, that's
Erdrich.
That's the first sign that I'm not going to read. I'm not going to get through any of them. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
what?
So, yeah, I haven't started one yet.
Ah.
So at work, I asked some of my colleagues, "Do any of you have any of the of her books?" And lo and behold, I got seven of them from different staff members. So I have them on my desk, and so I tweeted Carrie and I asked her, "What should I read first on this list?" And I sent her a picture.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Well, Plague of Doves, because that is
but
my
favorite." Wait a minute, did my appallment come through first before I tweeted back?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
I am appalled that you have not read, that you live in Minnesota, Enrique, and you have never read Louise Erdrich.
I'm embarrassed, but I've been reading other things, and so that's where this whole thing got started.
Have you been lying about having read the books? Are you ever in a conversation where she comes up and you kind of act like you've read it?
I don't act like it. No, I'm pretty honest about the books that I haven't read. Now, my history goes back to grad school and being an English major and getting a PhD in English. I have lied plenty about reading all of these novels, but we can get into it later.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Vincent, are you appalled that Enrique, a man of Enrique's letters, would not have read Louise Erdrich?
Well, here is the problem.
No.
I haven't
Vincent.
I've only read one chapter of one of her works. She is an incredible poet and, of course, a great novelist. And I worked at her bookstore for exactly 90 minutes. I cut up some boxes in the back. That's very true.
Wait a minute. And then you got fired or what happened?
I just, they didn't need a
box cutter?
They didn't need someone like me to come and cut boxes in the back anymore. So I was done.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
But so I didn't know that your author was Louise Erdrich. I also, like every time I went into Birchbark, my hands would get really sweaty. I'm like, what if they ask me something about their books? And even one time, one of their managers gave me one of her books for free to read, and I gave it to my mom.
Wow.
And I.
Oh, my gosh.
And so now I'm like, all right, well, Enrique is coming clean. So I'm going to come clean, too.
Yeah.
Was it a Louise Erdrich book that is your book that you lie about reading?
No.
Okay,
it
good.
Is not.
Good.
It is
so,
not.
But that's another author that you lie about yeah. reading.
Well, that's
just so the, I'm
well,
clear
only
here.
To the Erdrichs themselves. Like everyone else, I just haven't read it. I haven't. But to them specifically. I lie right to their face. So that's
nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you do that?
Very easy. I just tell myself it's the truth.
Yeah.
So, and when you
there
believe yourself.
There isn't like a twitch, you know, below your left
well,
eye
I do
that
have,
gives you away.
I do have a background in acting. So, Carrie, I can just tell anybody anything. Honestly.
He is very good on the way up. He just had me on. Like, he used to work in the parking lot. And I'm like, oh, really? Well, it's
well, I was getting,
nice
I was
to
getting,
have
I was
you
getting,
back.
Well, the thing is, I was getting my soothing
nice
voice
back.
Ready for NPR. So yeah. I really wanted to work on it and the things
you need
that
to work
I was lying
on that
about.
Earnestness and bemusement. But we'll get to that later. Okay. Molly, are you... Hey, you've read Louise Erdrich's books, right?
My favorite part about this conversation, I'm not embarrassed to say this on NPR. I don't even know who we're talking about.
What?
Awful. Carrie,
that's
I'm leaving.
Wonderful.
I'm leaving.
That's excellent. Yeah.
You're
perfect.
Leaving. I'm leaving. You three can just talk among yourselves about all the books you've never read. How's that?
No
what
shame.
Am I doing here?
I have
See,
no
what?
Shame.
You
I,
have no shame. You are not embarrassed about
no,
that.
I mean, I... Am
she's
I a little
like the,
embarrassed?
She's like
maybe.
The Minnesota Nobel laureate in my mind for
See,
literature.
When I Google this, when I leave here, I'll probably be embarrassed.
She gives great birthday presents. I want to let all of you know that. Incredible
does she?
Birthday presents.
Wow.
Yes,
if you them. Work in the store even for 90 minutes? Or
I think so.
Did
I think,
you get a birthday gift from her?
I did. Mm-hmm.
What do you? What? Why?
Yeah.
She's going to hear this and
she
be
is,
like,
gonna,
give
and
me
she's
that
gonna,
gift
She's
going
to email me and go, Carrie, Vince lies a lot. He's just, he's making things up. I gave him no gifts. No, I received something.
I don't
birthday.
Know whether to believe you.
I,
was it a book that you threw away and
no,
never read?
It was a first edition. No, I was about to lie. There, I was about to lie. It was a really nice scarf. It was a really nice scarf.
Mm. For having shown up for 90 minutes at her store?
I think Jeez. for being, I think just for being Vince Moniz and
oh, yeah.
and really, I'm funny.
There
so.
Won't be any gifts coming after this roundtable.
Great.
I can tell you that. Why do you feel no shame about her or anybody else that you haven't read?
Well... I think it's mostly because I feel about reading for leisure like I do about exercise. And it's like, I think both are important.
Yeah.
Both are important. But I'm going to invest my time doing things I like and know I like. So, like, there's a book that I think seems like something I'm really going to want to read. I mean, reading a book takes a lot of time. So that's what I'm going to focus on. But if I get a good recommendation, I mean, tell me what to read. I'll read it.
No, that's not what we're here for. We're here to find out
so
why
rather,
you're lying.
Let me get this straight. You'd rather exercise?
No, with exercise, oh, okay. There's another thing where I hate running.
Oh, yeah.
So
it.
Why would I spend my time running
yeah, I
when I could do something
yeah.
else?
So of the two, which do you like least, the reading or the exercise?
Oh, it depends
she
on if...
She actually has to think about that.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. I like exercise. I like reading. It totally depends
on
what I'm doing.
I wanted you to be on this roundtable.
Yeah,
wow.
my strategy with that is I read 25 pages of something. If I don't like it, I put it down. I feel extra guilty for
yeah.
doing it. But that's kind of the way I do it. I almost feel like I have to give everyone a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Enrique,
you know,
how often does that happen? Where you?
It happens... It happens maybe once a year. It's like one of these things, and maybe you know, it's like you start reading a book and you finish it and it's a little dissatisfying or unsatisfying, and you read another one, it's also unsatisfying. I'm like, I need some recommendations here for something that's going to really, really capture me.
But then I think, am I just kind of in a mood? I had that happen recently,
right.
Books for Pleasure, and I just thought, I've been through three novels and none of them
exactly.
have done it for me.
Yeah.
So it's me. It's not them.
And it may be. And the reason I say that is because in the past I've done that before, and then I go back and read the book that I put down. Love it.
Right.
So I'm like, well, maybe it was a period of time where my kids were like acting up or whatever it may be, or my wife, you know, and it works.
Or
so
my maybe, wife was acting.
My
you
wife
started
was
to
acting
say that.
Up, or she was yeah. really busy or whatever it may be. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, Vincent. You read 25 pages and put a book down, or do you feel compelled to finish?
I am a really fast reader. No, no joke.
Is that a lie?
No lie.
Okay.
I read really
tell.
Fast. And what I really like is graphic novels.
Mm.
I really like because, well,
yeah.
one, there's art in it. And two, there aren't a lot of words. There's a lot of word bubbles, but there isn't full on pages. Because when I get into a novel, I really want to go slow. I really want to kind of enjoy it because I'll just pick the pace up and I'll just, like that, the book will be done.
So right.
There's a couple novels that I'm waiting to read.
I can really understand this about the rushed experience.
Right.
When you love a book, you do want to savor it. You want to let it encompass you in
right.
some ways. And I'll slow down reading a novel that I really love to savor the experience more, even though there might be 10 other books waiting for me.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, so what's the book you lied about reading?
All right.
And tell me the story.
Okay, so it's the Bible. That's the book that but here's how I get around it, okay?
Do people actually expect that you've read the entire Bible?
I feel that people, it really makes them a little like, oh, he's read the Bible. Good. Well, that guy's read the Bible, so he's not evil and lying to us. But how I get away with it, just in case, like, you know, an older person wants to, like, quiz me on it, I was a part of a group when I was a little boy called Awanas. And part of that group was to learn scripture. And then once you learned it and memorized it, they gave you a little jewel, and it went on a crown on your Awanas vest.
Wow.
And so I was really good at
is
memorizing.
Is all this true?
This is very true. This is, I was in it for exactly 3 months, and there was like 3 crowns on your chest, and they had little holes in it for the jewels to go in there, and there was like a bronze and a silver and a gold one. I have no reason why. I don't know. But I got all of my jewels filled up or onto my little crowns, and they thought it was really awesome, and they took me to other little Awanas groups and had me read the scriptures, and I got really good at it. But the only one that I remember now is John 3:16, and I think everyone knows that one.
I don't
because
know
of
that.
Football.
Go ahead.
Oh well,
because of football.
Because I don't know why, but there's always
what
somebody in the stadium holding John 3:16, and I always say it in my head only because of the word believeth. I've never heard that word anywhere else except for that
I
tiny
said
bit
it
of,
last week on the show.
I believeth in
what,
you.
Tell me what the what the scripture is.
Oh, no.
You said
oh,
the only
no.
one I remember.
All right. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son forever, for whoever believeth in him mm-hmm. shall not perish, but have everlasting life.
May I ask why that is held up at football games?
I have no idea.
Does anybody know
but
why?
It helps me remember this Christian Boy Scouts group I was in when I was a tiny little boy.
So you can get away with throwing that out there.
Yeah, I've read the Bible
yeah,
like 100 times. Yes, yeah. Yeah, the Bible. Yes, all the things. And there's donkeys and people that live to 2,000 years old. I know all about it. And lobster is evil. I know all of those things. So trust me.
Yeah.
I can help you find your parking.
Well, you know that, I don't know if either of you have seen that movie called Metropolitan by Whit Stillman. It came out, I think, in the 80s or whatever.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Of course.
Sorry.
I don't think it exists.
Well, anyway,
you're right, he's lying to us.
Anyway, I'm not lying to you. It's kind of a movie about the, you know, New York rich kind of Park Avenue folks, and there are these young people, and they're talking about reading. And one of the characters asks another kind of highfalutin guy, have you ever, tell me which Jane Austen you've read. And he's like, none of them. And he's like, one doesn't have to have read the book to have an opinion about it. I'm like, love that. Love that.
See, I agree.
Nice
I totally agree.
What? What do you mean you agree with that?
Well, I mean, isn't that what movies are for?
Yes.
Yeah, a great quote. I think about that all the time when people talk to me about authors, and I can ramble on about authors. I don't have to have read them. I just have read about them.
But you do feel compelled to ramble on because people in your circle are looking to you for literary insight,
right?
Because they do know you read a lot.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so when the eyes turn to you and you have to make that split second decision about whether to lie about having read it and then access what you remember about the movie or tell the truth, what happens?
I tell the truth.
Do you?
Yeah.
You cop to not having read it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like I should be better at it, at lying about books I haven't read.
I'm so glad we have somebody without total shame on the panel here. Because she's like,
nice.
What is the problem? Okay, why?
Why what?
Why, beyond the exercise and the reading, aren't there situations where everybody has something smart to say about a book and you think, how could it be that I've not read that? And now I can't say anything intelligent about that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My husband and I actually talked about this morning, and he says he's an engineer. He says he's not a reader. And he feels less like smart, you know, by having not read some of the classics. I can't remember which.
Right.
And to be honest, there's some that I haven't read or did read, but can't remember. I've just heard you guys talking about To Kill a Mockingbird, obviously, the other day.
Right.
I know I read it, but I don't know. I got to reread that one. I mean, it was a long time ago that I read it.
Right.
I couldn't say anything about it. And I do feel like it's very, it's kind of socially, it is embarrassing to not be able to participate
why that is. But I want to say that I love it that your husband admits that to you, that he feels, he doesn't feel well-rounded, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he hasn't read some of the classics.
But see, I think the danger in that is that because of that, he feels like he is not a reader. And now because he hasn't read a lot of the classics, he doesn't want to read anything because he identifies as not a reader. So I think that making people feel, you know, less in tune with what's going on, it ultimately makes you feel less smart and then causes you to not read at all.
Right.
It can be a problem.
It's a circular kind of vortex that you'll never get out. Isn't that a good way to describe that?
God, I got to read the Bible. Oh, my God.
Yeah, really.
Such flimsy pages. Oh, I don't know how
Enrique, where would Molly's husband start to, I mean, if he was like, you know, okay, I can't read 15 classics this summer, but I can read one. Where should he start so he can get back into this thing of reading?
I'll give you two.
Mm-hmm.
I think The Great Gatsby.
Right. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or The Sun Also Rises by Hemingway. Mm-hmm. I think both of those are short. They're classics. I think they're like of a certain period, and I think that the language is excellent. But those are the two that I would, I mean, off the top of my head, of course, that's of a very specific era, but those are the two that I would
read. And the authors had this really complicated relationship. So if he ends up loving those novels, maybe he's drawn into learning more about Hemingway and Fitzgerald. Okay, Vincent, what are the two books for Molly's husband? Doesn't have to be a classic.
Ooh.
Yeah, to get him back into this idea that he could be a reader.
There's this really good murder mystery novel by Sherman Alexie called Indian Killer. No kidding.
Yeah?
It's really good. And he writes, well, everyone knows how he writes, but he writes in a short story style. So each chapter is its own little, like, encompass thing that kind of connects to the next chapter, that connects to the next chapter. It's a really good read. Also, I liked On the Road.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. Not lying about how much I liked that book. There was a time when I was like, there are classic books that I haven't read that I really want to read. And so I just started reading books like that. And Slaughterhouse-Five.
Slaughterhouse-Five. I just read that for the first time.
Oh, really? Oh, so.
About a month ago. And it was like, wow, it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was a great, really great book. That's another one.
Do you think with a book like that, that you've, when everybody's read it, you feel like, well, the time has passed. Like, why did it take you so long to pick up Slaughterhouse-Five? The time passed. Plenty of other books to read. Why go back?
I'll be honest with you. I think the reason I picked it up was because I saw the cover design. There was a new cover design for Slaughterhouse-Five that just came out in paperback. And I'm like, what a great design.
Yeah.
Why not just pick it up? I've been meaning to pick it up for a while. And it's a beautiful cover. So I picked it up and there it is.
Nice.
And so that's, you know, that's as honest as I get.
I did that with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I really liked the cover. And I was like, I need to read this. So I did.
And what did you get out of it? And at this age, that you're at, right? Maybe you brought something new to the reading.
I had only saw the movie, and I didn't know that the narrator was the Indian guy. That was amazing to me. I was like, wow, this is really cool. I went on to do a staging of it at the Children's Theater in their black box.
Yeah.
And it was the same.
Sounds
the narrator
disturbing.
Was the Indian guy. It wasn't. It was really incredible. I didn't lift any fountains off the ground or anything like that. And, you know, there was an offstage murder at the end. No spoilers. But, you know, I really was thankful that I just didn't watch the movie for this.
I have a story about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. When I was in high school in South Texas, I was in the drama class. And we were in a drama team. And we had 9th, 10th, and 11th graders doing a play. For some reason, the drama teacher decided to put on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for 9th, 10th, and 11th graders.
That's intense.
Tell me about it. And we went through three or four rehearsals of that and read the script, and she decided to just trash it, and we didn't go forward on it. And I'm like, you know. But anyway, just like, why would she choose such an intense play?
Is it possible she'd never read it?
Possibly. Yeah.
Oh,
anyway.
Right? Yeah.
That
yeah.
makes sense. Mm-hmm. I bet that's what happened.
I know.
Yeah.
She was like,
yeah.
oh, my goodness.
The first three readings are like, what have I wrought yeah. with my mm-hmm. class here?
So I think we did, like, you know, Music Man or something.
Yeah. Yeah. you know. Nice.
You're
yeah.
listening,
nice transition.
You're listening to the Friday Roundtable. I call this the moment when I bring three smart people into the studio to talk about the week's news or a big idea. We're just riffing on this really interesting topic that the New York Times took up and the Guardian has taken up about why we lie about reading certain books. I've lied about reading a book, and if you listen to the show, you know what it is, but I'll talk about it here. You know, what's the social pressure? I mean, what's the reason that you just can't really come out and say, I know everybody's read Gatsby, but I haven't. What does that say about you? And as you listen to this conversation, I want to know whether you've ever heard yourself lying about a book. Was it like a straight up lie? Like, yep, loved it. Yep, I know three facts about that book and I can lie about it. Or was it like a lie of omission? Talk to me about that on Twitter. It's @CarrieMPR. Our roundtablers today, Enrique Olivares. Yeah, is a vice president of communications and development at Clues. Molly Mogren-Catt is with us, founder and writer of the Hey Eleanor Project. And Vincent Moniz Jr. is a writer and spoken word artist with a book coming out that has no title. We'll get back to our roundtable conversation here in just a minute, but first a look at the latest news.
Good morning. I'm Phil Picardi from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. President Obama is expected to have more to say this afternoon about suspected Russian meddling in the U.S. election process when he holds a White House news conference. Obama is promising the U.S. will retaliate against Russia, telling National Public Radio this morning the U.S. must take action when a foreign government tries to interfere in U.S. elections. Donald Trump and his supporters insist the Democrats' outrage about Russia is really an attempt to undermine the validity of his election victory. The UN Health Agency's top official in Syria says negotiations are underway in hopes of resuming evacuations from rebel-held parts of eastern Aleppo. Evacuations were brought to a halt after the Syrian government said a convoy leaving Aleppo was fired on by rebels. Russia is claiming that all women and children have been evacuated, but the UN official says there are a large number of women and children who still want to get out of eastern Aleppo. Officials in Texas have eased restrictions on tap water use in outlying parts of Corpus Christi nearly 24 hours after warning residents a harmful chemical had leaked from an industrial plant into the water supply. The city has released a map showing the parts of the city where it is now safe to drink water from the faucet. City officials are blaming an asphalt company for the contamination. A police officer in Washington state is reported in serious but stable condition after surgery for a gunshot wound to the head sustained when he responded to a call. Police in Mount Vernon, Washington, say a man started shooting from a house, touching off an hours-long standoff. Police say a primary suspect is in custody, along with two other people. And John Glenn's body will lie in state for a public viewing at Ohio's Capitol building starting at noon today. The former fighter pilot, astronaut, and senator died last week. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:30.
From Comedy Central's World News Headquarters in New York, this is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
On the next Fresh Air, Trevor Noah talks about satirizing the news in the Donald Trump era and growing up biracial in South Africa, where when he was born, it was illegal for his black mother and white father to have had intimate relations. He has a new memoir. Join us.
Later on All Things Considered, it's Friday, so our resident pundits process the week in politics, and then the Cube critics set your silver screen agenda. I'm Tom Kranitz. Our Friday pair of pairs and all the day's news. Join me on Minnesota Public Radio News starting at 3.
Programming is supported by Great River Energy, providing reliable electric service to 28 Minnesota member co-ops with a diverse mix of power generation, including power plants and renewable energy. Great River Energy, powering what's possible.
Support comes from the Ordway, introducing their 2017-18 season packages. Experience Ordway your way by choosing from Broadway hits including Jesus Christ Superstar, Kinky Boots, Annie, and Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights. Tickets at ordway.org.
Good
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Curtis. This is NPR News. This morning at 11, you'll hear a Counter Stories conversation about race in 2016. And at 10, coming up, Marco Werman, you hear him on The World, speaks to people who know and have worked with Bob Dylan to find out what makes Bob Dylan's lyrics worthy of a Nobel Prize in Literature. But first, we're listening back to one of our favorite roundtables of the year, the topic, books we've lied about reading. Let's listen.
I'm Carrie Miller. You're listening to the Friday Roundtable. It's a roundtable that picks up on some kind of interesting pieces done in the New York Times and in the Guardian of London about the books we lie about reading. Everybody does it. We're examining why people do it with our roundtablers today. Vincent Moniz Jr., Molly Mogren-Catt, and Enrique Olivares with us. And Molly, coming to you on the book. Now, you have identified yourself as not a big reader anyway.
That's not true. I read a lot.
I just hadn't read whoever
I'm supposed to read whenever I leave here.
Jane Austen.
Jane Austen.
Louise Erdrich.
Yes,
Louise
Erdrich.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you said something about reading and exercise, so I made a wrong assumption about
no,
that.
I love reading.
Okay. So what is the book that you feel like you should have read but you haven't?
I have a kind of naughty story.
No good.
And it's been a secret.
Vincent likes naughtiness.
I've kept this secret for 15 years.
And now's the perfect time to reveal.
So when I was a senior in high school, I took this class called Humanities at Stillwater Area High School. And over the summer, we were all supposed to read The Brothers Karamazov.
I've never read that book.
Yeah, well, me neither. So the problem is that, you know, it's like, a 1,000 pages, and it's really just, it was just a lot. And come on, I was in high school, and I had to work a bunch, and I was supposed to read it over the summer. But the thing is,
you had the whole summer to read this.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. It's not like I didn't try at all, but it's pretty boring. So the issue is that if you read the book, you got this cool t-shirt. And it was I still have it. It's at my house.
Oh, so you got the t-shirt.
It's light blue. It's a drawing of Dostoevsky. And in it, above it, it says, "Redemption through suffering" in Russian. And I was like, I gotta have the shirt. So I lied about having read the book.
And you didn't suffer, and you weren't redeemed, and yet you're walking around with this proclamation on your chest.
Absolutely.
For something you never did.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
What do you think you've learned about suffering?
You know, I felt pretty bad because so many of the kids in the class allegedly did read the book.
You don't buy it?
I mean, there was a lot of really smart kids in that class. They probably did read it, but
yeah. Well, what I mean, how would the was it an honor system that you only had to say, "Yep, did that."
Yeah. Oh, and participate in discussions, which don't worry, I did that too.
How did you do that?
Wow. Spark notes or what? What's the thing? Yeah, Cliff Notes. I mean, I read that. I read sections
of it. That takes moxie, girl, to raise your hand in a class for a book you never read to participate.
In thinking about this conversation, I am kind of ashamed at the great lengths I have gone in my life to not read the book because you end up spending so much more time researching things online, right?
I know.
Like,
than just reading it. What do you think happened? Do you think it became, you know, at first it was, I'll get to that, and then it became kind of this object that you developed this adversarial relationship with?
You mean reading?
No, the book itself. You'd walk by, the book would be sitting on your parents' coffee table, and you'd walk by and think, I'll get to that next week. A month later, you're starting to actively resist picking up that book.
Right. Yeah, it was sort of like signing up for the marathon, but not training.
Yeah. And then starting to hate the idea of training.
Yeah. It was a lot like that. It was a lot like that. But after, you know, it's like we would talk about this book at length in class. And after a while, I kind of thought, I'm sort of glad I didn't read that. I don't know. It just seemed a little dry.
Yeah. It's a great book, but boy, for a senior, and even for a senior.
Like a 17-year-old?
Give
a lot
her
of times,
excuses.
All the pages. Yeah. I mean, the other one that my daughter was reading, and she was in eighth grade, was Watership Down.
Oh, yeah, that's intense.
Oh, my gosh. What an intense book.
And really, it is.
You don't even understand a lot of... I read that probably at that age, and we'll never go back to that.
No.
It wasn't a good reading experience.
And I'm like, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to read it at the same time you're reading it. That way we can discuss it. I got 50 pages through it. I'm like, I don't want to read this book ever again. Go do whatever you need to do.
Nice role model there, Enrique.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, my book you mentioned was in high school, it was Last of the Mohicans, which we had to read as juniors.
Ugh.
And that book, even if I see it now, I will like get a little like
hive breakout,
kind of like anxiety in my stomach.
What about the million movies they made?
I know.
Of that book?
The movies are excellent.
Oh.
The most recent one with Daniel Day-Lewis is great. It's not even, but it's not the book.
Vincent's not buying this.
I disagree.
Really?
No, I do not like the super Indian stereotype. That is not my fun.
Okay. All right. Okay. I see that. I see that now. Yes.
Yeah. So what? Tell me what that book promotes that.
Well, it's it's a non-white author writing about made-up Indians, so it's really it's not true.
What's there not to love about that?
Yeah, right.
I mean,
that's really good and topical. And you know, it's a story that happens over and over. A white guy comes in and he becomes a better Indian than all the Indians. He can shoot straight or run faster. There's a lot of running
happen?
In that movie, right, Enrique?
That's the best part. Everything else,
right?
He's
being followed by one of the founding members of the American Indian Movement, and that guy's really big, too. So I just didn't believe that guy and that other guy, Daniel Day-Lewis, was running through the forest that much. I think there were a lot more breaks that they didn't show on camera.
Well, not only that, but I think also that the female character, I mean, you know,
right.
all the characters are
right.
stereotypes, I mean,
right.
across the board in that book, mm-hmm. and that's something that I'm
that's
like,
helpful.
You know, anyway.
But yeah, so
right, so now you've completely crushed his.
Well, Enrique, we'll always look at that book. Vincent.
I agree totally. Mm-hmm. But that's one book that we had to discuss. We had to do it, in class and everything. It was in a group of smart kids. All of them like read it, except I had to lie and answer all the questions. Mm-hmm.
That's not your book, though, is it?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah. So one thing though about the idea of assigned reading, I think that you do want kids to have the kind of reading foundation, right, that prepares you for what you're going to encounter in college, if that's where you're headed. But I think that leads... I hate the book 1984. I hate it because I remember it being assigned at a time when I was reading a lot of other stuff that I loved and the discussions were boring in the classroom. And that kind of ruined it for me. And there is something to that, isn't there? The classroom assigned reading of novels that don't fit your life very much.
One of the classes that I took at Oxford College was a required class. And it was basically what the teacher said, this is Bible study. And so we had to read.
And you were like, well, read it.
I've read it twice.
I could teach
so
this
much.
Class.
I've read that class. I've read all of those things so much. Let me recite John 3:16 for you because I know it by heart because I've read all of the Bible. And it was really hard. It was the discussions were really awesome. There were a couple Muslim ladies in there, and the larger conversation was excellent. But being forced to read about 2,000-year-old people, that was not fascinating. That was really like, man, that is a really great story, but that is not true at all.
Don't you think a lot of the reading list in high school looks like that?
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
Is not really relevant. So why?
Well, and I think part of it too, kind of going back to what I said earlier, there is this fine line you have to play between saying, hey, you should read the Great Gatsby, you should read that, you should read To Kill a Mockingbird, but you do run the risk of zapping the fun out of reading too. So I do have a friend who's a high school English teacher. And she makes sure that every week they have a day it's just like fun reading time and kids can
whatever
read.
Whatever they want to bring in?
Just about. I mean.
Really?
Huh. I don't know. Maybe there's something you shouldn't be reading in school. But yeah, she has a big stack of books with like the Hunger Games and stuff like that. That if some of these books that you're getting assigned don't speak to you, maybe try this. And reading doesn't suck, like you think it does.
I really believe in that because I think for people that are not, maybe you grow up in a household where there isn't a lot of reading, so you're not into the discipline of that, and your first encounter with literature is, 1984, which is a great book, but it's just something that doesn't seem to speak to your life where you are. You can turn kids off from reading forever.
Yeah. Have you read 1984 recently?
No, I've never gone back to it.
I went back to it about 3 years ago, and it was the It was amazing, but I was probably, it was just the most depressing book I've ever probably read. I read it.
And relevant to today, yeah, with surveillance society.
And I read it during Christmas time, during the Christmas holiday, which was not, you know, ideal.
What I saw the Apple computers commercial. That's the same thing, right?
Right.
That's exactly
totally.
The same? Yeah, okay, yeah. Good.
You're good for a dinner party.
Be right there with you.
You don't have to have
read
on your level in order to have a
You are good for a dinner party. What do you, tell me what you, Vincent, what you remember of your assigned reading and whether... I mean, you're a poet, so...
Well, here's the thing. I had a really incredible English teacher in seventh grade. His name is Jeff Summers. He's the co-owner of Izzy's Ice Cream.
Oh.
And he instead, because I could read. I didn't have any problem with that. And so reading the stuff was fine. It was just being in class and not paying attention. But I could always do good on tests.
Yeah.
It was the in-between. So what he did instead was much like Molly's friend. He was like, well, what do you want to read about? And I was like, well, what would you have me read? And he gave me a copy of Sherman Alexie's, The Lone Ranger and Tonto, Fist Fight in Heaven.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. I was in the seventh grade when that came out, and I was like, Indians write like this? Like, there's just Indian people that write? And I was immediately immersed in that amount of writing. And then he showed me this CD. It was called AKA Graffiti Man, and it was John Trudell's spoken word. And my whole brain was just exploded into this literary world. And I started picking favorites and that really started voraciously reading Indian authors from that point.
Do you kind of trace your writing back to that
exactly
moment, that summer?
Exactly, back to the Jeff Summers at Izzy's Ice Cream. I'll always look at Izzy's Ice Cream and go, that's where the love of my reading comes from.
Right. Is your book that's coming out, is it poetry?
It is.
I mentioned
poetry.
That. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Yeah. All right, Enrique, to you.
Well, with me, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I think when I was thinking of what I have lied about in terms of reading, it all goes back to this whole issue of assigned reading.
Ah.
I almost feel like the older I've gotten, the more I kind of don't lie about what I don't read. I mean, like, I didn't like it or whatever it may be. But during grad school, when I was in grad school and during high school, when I would be assigned these books, I would, you know, I was a master at skimming and whatever it may be. And, you know, some of them like Bleak House. Have you ever read Bleak House?
In college.
Oh, yes.
Believe it or not. No.
Yeah, it's bleak. Yeah. it's quite bleak. So that's one that I just I kind of skimmed and lied through my teeth, not only in discussions in class, but also as I wrote papers, et cetera. You know?
I think it takes, in a graduate level class, some intestinal fortitude to contribute to it. And you know what else I was going to say?
Yes,
to contribute to a conversation about a book you have not even read.
Exactly. And it's the easy thing about things like Dickens is that it's all, well, for me at least, it's all about plot. So you can, you know, read
others. There's a good one for your husband.
You know, read other sources,
Dickens,
or whatever it may
yeah.
be, and you're going to get plot. It's when you get to the issue of style. Like with poetry and stuff, I can't lie about reading poetry because it's all about the subtleness and the nuance. Whereas if, you know, it's easy for me to lie about things that it's all about, you know, plot, murder, mysteries, right. whatever it may be. So,
And you've carried the guilt of that ever since.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Bleak House?
It was Bleak
That's
House.
That's okay.
Yeah. Bleak House is the one that I, and the other one, and this is another tough one, is The Golden Bowl.
Ah.
Henry James.
Yeah. Oh. Good movie about that.
A good movie.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Yeah.
You're saved.
Is it on Netflix?
Is it? Can you Netflix it?
Yeah. No, it was. It was really well done. Yeah. Here's mine. Who's read Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury?
Mm.
Molly, not even looking at you.
Now
she's going to be like,
no, I did read
like,
one
I
of
actually,
his, but I don't remember
did you?
Which
That's
one it
probably
was.
It
was in high school.
Because it's assigned.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Senior in high school. I don't know.
I have the most not even hate relationship with that book. And it's just developed over the, it represents failure to me.
Yeah.
I can't get through it. Now I'm to the point where I don't want to get through it. And then one of my bookish resolutions for 2015 is to read, well, initially I started out saying I could never finish Sound and the Fury, but this time I'm going to grit my teeth and get through it. And all these readers wrote in to say, don't put yourself through that. Read A Light in August by Faulkner. And I am, and I love it. So it's not this antipathy that I can let go of my antipathy about Faulkner and access him in a different way. I feel better. But for years, when this would come up, I'd act like I had read that book.
It's interesting because I think, haven't we all been discussing fiction?
You're right.
Yeah. And, you
That's
know,
true.
For me, nonfiction, I told myself this year I was going to try to read as much nonfiction as possible.
Oh. Tell me why. Why'd you
feel
like
you had to
do that?
So much fiction.
Ah. Okay.
And I really feel that I should really read what's kind of going out there, you know, people, journalism, you know, journalists, whatever it may be. I did pick up most recently the new Jim Crow. And I got
Michelle Alexander.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Wonderful book. But I only got halfway through. I just could not finish the book.
Why?
I just could not. It was.
Wow, it that was, book is so compelling.
It was compelling, but it was also a little bit too academic for me.
Oh.
And maybe it's my transition from fiction to nonfiction. Maybe that was the wrong thing to start my nonfiction kind of thing with. But it was very compelling. But after halfway, I'm like, I get the point, and I get the research. It's time for me to put this aside. Someone at work gave it to me, and I lied to her that I had read the book. So there we go.
So now she's going to know.
Yeah,
right?
Now she will know. Did I won't tell her that we're going to be doing this.
Did you feel the same kind of regret that you do if you put a book of fiction aside?
I didn't. Only because
I wonder why.
I wonder why. I think for me, it's just an issue of nonfiction is I have no idea. I'm trying to think. That's the first time I've been asked that question. But no, I don't feel the same guilt putting aside a nonfiction book as I do a fiction book.
Do you think it's because you could go to Wikipedia and just find out what happened?
For everything.
Possibly.
Yeah,
possibly. And maybe it's my background and as, you know, working in literature and being a, you know, PhD student in literature, et cetera, that I have a much more, expectation that I should love literature and fiction. But when I read nonfiction, it's different.
Right.
The other book that I put that I started reading that I put down was, oh, I forgot what the name of it was, but it was about world health and how world health, you know, people in different countries suffer differently from other people in different countries, and it was wonderful.
Not Behind the Beautiful Forevers.
No, okay. No.
Have you read that?
I got halfway through that.
And
put that one down as well because I had a problem with that because it read too much like fiction for me.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how could this reporter know what this person
she was there
feeling?
Oh, okay.
But how could she know this person was feeling this?
Right.
And so I had a real problem with that, and I would talk to people about it, and they would say, I didn't even think about that. That's what makes it compelling. But it's is it really nonfiction?
Do you guys read much nonfiction?
Tons.
Do you?
I like it a lot. And actually this year I did the opposite thing where I tried to read more fiction.
Yeah.
This year. It's partially because I got the library all synced up to my Kindle. So it's like
nice.
Access to everything. But
so what compelled you to say, okay, this really is the year I have to read more fiction?
I think it was, honestly, it was just that so many friends had recommended lots of books to me that were fiction. So I thought, all right, we'll give this a whirl.
And how's that whirl going?
Great. I've probably read 10 books in the last 2 or 3 months.
Wow.
I mean, I've read a ton.
Yeah. What have you read that stands out?
Oh, gosh. What did I read? Well, I think the last time I was here, I was talking about Station 11.
Yeah.
That one was really good. I like that a lot.
That is good. Emily St. John.
Oh, gosh. It was so good. And what else have I read lately? Well, I read some kind of trashy stuff, but that's fine. I mean, not too bad. But
it is fine.
It's so fun. Like Crazy Rich Asians. That was a fun one that I blew through at the cabin. And
I thought
that
it was
going to really
be 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, no, no,
like
no.
That.
Not that kind of trash.
Yeah.
And then, I read.
Because everybody's read that.
Yeah.
Vincent admitted.
Oh, of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
All of the. I and I have watched the movie as well.
Are you lying? Or
no.
You've spent your time reading 50 Shades of Grey?
All the time.
I
have the audiobook, and it's in the car right now, Carrie. This is not a lie.
Let's go for a ride. He's lying to me. He's not. I don't think he is.
I think
this is true.
No. Isn't there a lot of misspellings in that, Molly?
Well, I read some of it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I just realized it did the opposite thing where I've totally read all of the books, but I just lied to you guys about having done that.
See?
Because I'm embarrassed. Why did I read all of them?
Oh,
though?
Wow.
are they that like
they're
compelling?
Terrible. No, they're so bad. It's sort of like you can't it's like you can't stop reading cuz it's just so bad, but then
There's the sex.
Yeah, kind of.
That's why you can't stop reading.
I mean,
what were you
going to
say about another fiction you just read that you
I read The Astral. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Huh.
But
Astral?
That, Yeah, it's about a couple that lives in this apartment building in New York, and they're in their 50s, and they're getting divorced. And it was, I totally hated it. And I read it all the way to the end because I think it was partially because I usually quit. And I thought, I'll just see what this is like. I'll read the whole thing. Just kind of wish I had that time back.
You know, I've become so ruthless about, unless it's a book for work, I really have gotten into the, there's a million other books. I'm going to put it down and I'm not going to live with any kind of regret. I am not going through to the end for this.
Right. Well, and that's kind of before when I said the exercise and the reading thing, what I meant was I don't like doing any kind of exercise that I don't enjoy.
Oh, right.
What's the point of punishing yourself? Yes. I hate running. Yeah. I'm never going to run again. Right. I hate it.
Right.
I like yoga. I'll keep doing that. And the same thing with books. It's like we all have a finite amount of time in the day. So why would I spend hours reading something that is just kind of meh to me?
You've inspired me to ask these guys about the last guilty pleasure book that you read, besides 50 Shades. Vincent.
Oh, good, because I was lying about that.
I knew it.
The book that I really like is a graphic novel. It's The Dark Knight Returns.
Mm.
It's not...
This is a guilty pleasure for you, though?
It is.
Why?
I am... well, mostly because... not a lot of people. I mean, you know, it's cool and fun to read comics, and a lot of people do now. But there are a lot more people that are really like detail oriented about graphic novels, and I just really thought I'm going to read this because it's one of the 10 quote unquote best graphic novels. But I just it's not a Batman story that I care about. It's not. It really isn't. And I've only read it and reread it so that I can have larger conversations about the mythos of the guy that dresses up like a bat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, honestly.
So you can sound informed when you're talking about
Batman.
Exactly.
Right. And remember, it's a comic book, so there's not a whole lot of words in it. There's just a lot of, like, Batman punching things. So, you know, and digressing into anger. So for me... That's a guilty read.
Guilty pleasure there, Enrique. What would it be?
I'm trying to think. Not that I don't have guilty reads. I think for me, the guilty reads are more genre specific. Oh. So for me, it's crime novels. Mm. And I can't think of a specific novel that I've read recently that was totally guilty. Elizabeth George is, for me,
I like Elizabeth George.
Yeah, but she's just, it's just so compelling. It's all these people are unlikable, crazy. They're doing stupid things. You know, but you just kind of go through that, and it's something that I really kind of enjoy reading, you know.
You know, she wrote a book about writing. I'm surprised to hear you say people are doing stupid things in her novels.
Well, I remember having a conversation with someone and saying, you know, I really have a hard time with her and because none of her characters are likable. I'm like, well, okay, so do you mean that you only like to read books about characters that are likable? She's like, well, yeah, I want to relate to them, and none of these characters in Elizabeth George are likable.
Yeah.
I'm like, interesting.
Yeah.
So,
hmm.
You know, the other thing I was going to say about nonfiction that I'm enjoying now is that since I started picking up nonfiction, it's interesting how, unlike reading fiction, my nonfiction reading each book I read after each other is informing the one before. And so it's almost like I'm kind of like, I read Michelle Alexander was the first one I read as a nonfiction, The New Jim Crow. Then I read the book about L.A. crime, Jill Lavoie. And so it's interesting.
That's a good combination.
It's interesting how I'm, and then now I'm reading a book about the opiate addiction in America,
Dreamland,
which is excellent. And so, you know, unlike fiction, where I'm able to pick up different genres and maybe I don't even think about it, with nonfiction, for some reason, maybe subconsciously, I'm starting to pick things that kind of inform the one before it anyway.
Okay, so we're almost done. So this is the time when I ask for your roundtable reading recommendations. And I think I'll narrow this down. How about the book that you would put into the hands of somebody else that you read last year? So in 2015, you'd say, you've absolutely got to read this book. What would it be, Molly?
Well, this is one I actually just finished reading, and I'm at an interesting point in my life because I am 5 months pregnant.
Mm, congratulations.
So with my first kid, right?
Liza.
And
Sorry. That's not my son.
No, it's okay. I just finished reading Anne Lamott's Operating Instructions.
Oh, wow.
And it's about her first year as a mom. And it was just...
What a great read for you.
So good.
So good.
And my sister-in-law just had a baby, so she just read it. And so we've been really bonding over that. And it's been so fun. I just she's so honest and funny and real. And so
good.
Anybody, any new parents, I'd...
Good choice.
They read
Operating Instructions by Anne Lamott. Mm-hmm. Okay, Vincent, how about you?
There's a book that I've read four times. And I got to do a reading with the author. It's a book of poetry. It's called When My Brother Was an Aztec. And it's by Natalie Diaz. It is incredible. It is for me, it is what I hope to be as a writer one day. She's an incredible poet. And the stuff that she talks about growing up on her reservation, she's Mojave, so down in the Southwest area. Mm-hmm. It just really touches up a part of me that maybe, you know, other people don't get as, you know.
You said you've read it four times.
Four times. Well, I've also taught it at the Loft Literary Center. That's where I perform for Equilibrium at the Loft. So I read it four times because it's just, I get so much out of reading things four times. And so that's what I do with books of poetry because, you know, I really want to be a better poet.
So. You're drawing new insights, not just writing insights, right?
Right.
But new insights from her writing.
Right. And I believe, some incredible poets told me early on when I started writing that if you want to get to know an author, just read their work, and it'll tell you all you want to know about them. So that's really what I've been doing. Natalie Diaz, Orlando White, some really incredible, incredible indigenous writers.
Great.
But one that I wanted to talk about was Shannon Gibney's. I'm in line at the library. I'm like 2,000th in line for Shannon Gibney's new book, See No Color. And that's really what I—that's what I'm like desperately trying to get my hands
on. You haven't read that yet.
I have not. Yeah, but I'm the library. I'm just like, when is my turn?
Everyone's, I know.
It's, God, man. But so
they need more copies.
They do. They seriously.
Maybe
do.
You need your own copy.
I do, and maybe Shannon will hear this and maybe give me a free copy.
Or you could really.
That's what I'm doing on there. That's why I'm taking my time to go, Shannon, give me, please reach out to me and give me your books. I want to read you for free.
I might just write you a little check here so you can go buy it at a local bookstore when we're done.
Thanks, Gary.
That's the payola
and
part
Gary
of this.
Give me book money. Excellent.
That's right. And Enrique, the book that you would have to put into somebody else's hands.
A Visit from the Goon Squad.
Oh, good. Great. Jennifer Egan.
Wonderful book. I'd heard so much about it.
She is just incredible.
I'd heard so much about it. I was like, what is this? That's what a weird title. What's kind of going on? But once you get into it, it's genius and it's fun and it's fiction. And that one I read last year and I thought, why didn't I read this sooner?
Yeah. I'm going to throw one in here that didn't come out last year, but that I love and I picked it up again. And it's called The Good Lord Bird by James McBride. Have you read it? Really good. Really good. Take a note there, Vincent, for that one. Hey, thank you all. Great to have you on the show. Really good to have you here.
That was Carrie Miller speaking with Vincent Monez, Molly Mogren-Catt, and Enrique Olivares about books they've pretended to read. For more book discussions, go to nprnews.org/thread. There you can find book recommendations for the kids in your life, a conversation on why sci-fi and fantasy matter, and our favorite books of the year so far. I highly recommend Evicted by Matthew Desmond. It's an amazing book.